At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Yes, light shield.
Okay, good. All right, ready? 3, 2, 1, and welcome everybody back to the Built Different Show. And I am here with Kem. Matt caught polio, so he won't be on the next, you know, couple episodes. Just kidding. But we're here with Kem. This is episode 119 of the Built Different Show. We've been at this for a while now. We're going to keep, you know, coming at you with some stuff. We're going to be talking about the hottest free agency that we've had in a little bit here for basketball. Well, I can't say that. Basketball free agency has always been a mess. But we got some baseball. We got some football. We're really going to start leaning in to the football season. And as always, make sure you guys sit back, you know, relax, buckle in. As always, we got the best laughs, the hottest takes, and most importantly, the most different aura for you guys. So with that being said, this is the day after July 4th. Happy Independence Day to everyone that celebrates. I know it's a little weird out there in the world, but Kem, what is up? Why don't you lead us off? How's it going?
Oh man, peace, King. Man, everything is positive, man. As always, you know me, man. But yes, man, coming off the 4th, man, I try to keep it that way, man. It was real festive, real fun. Me and the missus took a nice little dinner cruise. It was pretty dope, man. It was like a nice little pirate situation. Another dinner cruise was out there. They were shooting at each other. Made it pretty dope. Fireworks, all that was pretty fire.
Right.
But yeah, man, coming off of it, man, getting ready for the football season, man. I'm hyped, man. Yeah. You know, just coming off of free agency and the end of last month, some of the biggest history was ever made in sports. Let me just kind of open it up real quick. You know, we don't really kind of cover too much of this sport when we talk, but it's one of the most popular sports in the world. Around the world, it's called football, but in America, we call it soccer, right? Cristiano Ronaldo, June 30th, I believe it was, became the highest paid sports athlete in the world. Okay.
Crazy.
On his extension for Al Nassr, which is the Saudi team. All right. He got a 2-year extension, keeping him there just until 2027.
I remember that first 2-year deal that he got was lucrative as well.
It was crazy, but it blew it all the way up to basically $492 million guaranteed.
Guaranteed. For 2 years?
Guaranteed over the whole contract, right? So let me just go through it for you. It's kind of fresh, bro. Listen, I love what the Saudis are doing. They're making sure that their people are able to enjoy sports as well. It's kind of crazy, man, what they're doing with boxing and all that kind of. It's just crazy, man. But
they've been dipping into basketball.
Yeah,
baseball,
a little bit of basketball. Trying, baseball. You know, yes, man. It's kind of crazy. They got the LIV golf tournament. But hey,
they tried to get Russell Westbrook over there. They tried to do a few things. It's crazy, man. Yeah, they got the money for it all.
They sure do, man. And let's talk about a little bit of Cristiano Ronaldo's, man. So for that, he get that $200 million per year. All right, $200 million per year.
Just to kick a ball around, bro.
Listen, he got a $25 million signing bonus, right? It rises to $38 million in his second year. He's 40 years old, mind you. So he's going to be 42 when he's done with this contract. All right, man, he gets 15% ownership in that team. He also gets crazy bonuses and perks. Listen to some of the bonuses he gets. He gets a private jet credit of $5.5 million and a 16-person staff. Like, so his chef, you know what I mean? Whoever, like just a 16-person staff. That's totally. And he gets a tax advantage, you know what I mean, through the contract being in Saudi Arabia because, you know, they don't have any taxes or anything. So all his money is his money over there. It is crazy, man. It is something that I just, you know, wanted to bring to everybody. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's actually,
as it pertains to sports, man. Something crazy. Amazing.
Holy shit, man. Yeah, I didn't go that far into the research of that. I just remember when he first signed the deal, everyone was like criticizing, like, oh, you sold out for money. But like, bro, if anyone's presented like these contracts, it should be a guarantee. You take that.
Yes.
Like,
it's the largest structural contract in professional sports. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, no, with all of the perks and all of, yes, exactly. Exactly.
He's so popular. People are going to show up to watch him play, like, whether he does bad or good. But, like, oh, man, that's so crazy. But, wow, what a way to start.
Yeah.
You know, 4th of July, I had the deck, you know, all nice and nice. The lawn was all did. Mm-hmm. On the deck, we had Mario Party, you know, blunts being passed around, glizzies and burgers, s'mores. A little fire in the middle, you know, it felt good to feel, you know, a little luxurious for the day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, other than that, I kind of wanted to like come back at you for the Tracy McGrady stuff a little bit. Now listen, I'll say like, I think you had, good takes, for, you know, that you won't find, you know, better tape, you know, than his and Brandon Roy's. I absolutely agree. I do. Like, do I actually feel like Tracy McGrady is different? I think I could come around and say yes.
Okay.
However, I think, like, there's some blind people out there. And I, like, you know me, I want to always tell the full story as much as I can fucking tell it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, people, when they think of Tracy McGrady, they think one of the most talented players ever, which, you know, it's fair. Mm-hmm. They think of him, you know, as a, obviously he's a Hall of Famer. He made the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. But man, people kind of forget some shit, man. Listen, I'm just going to throw it out there. And I just want you to, you know, tell me how you feel about it. Cause you lived more through, you were more conscious during his run than I was. Okay. Like, I was watching basketball at the time of his prime, but I was also really, really young. Mm-hmm. So you could probably give me more insight on this.
Okay.
So when you look at Tracy McGrady's career, you see a guy that did not make it out of the first round before, obviously, he was a role player on all those fucking teams and shit like that. And a lot of people will say that he did not have people on his team to be able to get out of the first round. Now, I want to contest that. I want to say that on his Orlando teams, I get it. We go back and we look at Tracy McGrady's career. And or we look at anybody's career of any teams that they've ever played on, and we only look at the superstars because no one remembers the role players, you know, 20 years later, unless they're like, you know, Tony Parker, or, you know, shit like that, guys that won multiple rings, Robert Horry, shit like that.
Okay.
The Magic, they had a team, man. Like Tracy McGrady as the superstar player, they had a lot of not only double digit scores, but they had defenders, they had depth, they had a good team. And Tracy McGrady did average 30 points per game in those playoffs, but if you go back and watch the tape, man, you look at those fourth quarters, you will see that Tracy McGrady shot himself and his team out of a lot of games. And there was a lot of chokes, and I get it, he was clutch in some parts of his career, but in the playoffs he absolutely was not. And then with the Rockets, I think they had a little less depth, but they had Yao Ming, you know, they had other players. But I think Tracy McGrady is just a tad bit overrated. Talent's all there. Talent's absolutely all there. Can't disrespect the Hall of Fame, you know, career and everything like that. I just think, you know, people gotta, if we're gonna highlight all the negatives about every single player, I think it would be fair to highlight that Tracy McGrady was a terrible playoff, like, not performer, but playoff clutch performer, and the fact that they didn't get out the first round, and I thought they absolutely should have, especially with the Magic.
Okay. All right.
Because it's hard, man. Because, like, you look back at his career, great talent. He put up stats, but there's no success from it. You know what I mean? There's no, like, there's no winning.
Right. So one of the things that we have to always consider when thinking about sports, and I'm going to be honest, like, what you've been able to witness. No, I'm going to be honest. In your tenure of watching sports, there has been a development in how people take care of their bodies and the length of their professional career and actually the control of their professional career. You know what I mean? There has been something, some of which we talked about last episode about how LeBron has empowered the new basketball culture during his tenure, you know what I mean, as so-called king of the league, right? And some of these things have taken place quietly before. Not to say, now here's one thing that's really cool. T-Mac was actually up in a series too where he should have actually won, you know what I mean, prior to going, you know what I mean, Houston and things of that nature. He actually was up in Orlando and everything
that's
like that. Now there's, listen, that is something that just, but when we talk about length of career, again, the average person only plays in the NBA about 4 years. You know what I mean? Like that has a great career or a great, you know what I mean? Something that we can encapsulate, you know what I mean? Like that is sustainable. But when you're actually like a player like him who was drafted where he was drafted and had to develop as well, as much as he had to develop, he is an out of high school guy too. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's no knock on him not getting out of the first round when you think about what was his contemporaries as well. You know what I mean? Most things are needed, man, in multiples. He couldn't do a lot of things by himself. You can say what you can about the double-digit scores. That's accurate early on. You know what I mean? But as it goes, as you keep a superstar and you have to pay them, the parts around them, you know what I mean? We know that happened. That always happened in the NBA. You know what I mean? Like, that's not nothing new. You know what I mean? About, like, the star player, you know what I mean? And the parts around him diminish. But, again, when it comes to his win percentage in the playoffs, I have nothing to argue, you know what I mean, as it pertains to that. But as far as talent, skill, attitude, mindset, come on, man, he's a different player for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said, like, I'll absolutely fucking agree that he's different. Like, yeah, he's different. You know me, I just try to get you mad sometimes.
He's different, but I can't, like, I cannot, like, because the stats are stats. You understand what I'm saying? Now here's the thing. That's been running real crazy a little while. You know, man, Bill Belichick said it best, man. The stats are for the losers. The wins are for the winners. You know what I mean? Like, the end of the game is for the winners.
Yeah, man. I mean, I have a lot of arguments with these dudes on Twitter, and, like, a lot of them will just, like, point out stats, mm-hmm. or, like, mm-hmm. you know, and I get it, but,
you know, stats are, you know, are good when comparing against other people, yeah, things of that nature. But when it comes to, like, what it takes to win and what we make for archetypes and prototypes and things of that nature.
Yeah, and you already know how I feel, because, like, I'm a big Jalen Hurts defender, so you mm-hmm. already know how I, you know, feel mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, I mean, before we, you know, get into the script a lot, I meant to do this on, like, last episode. I really want to give Sam Presti a shout-out.
Okay.
You know, Oklahoma City Thunder, he mm-hmm. runs, you know, the whole engine. He runs the crazy system they got put mm-hmm. in place, man. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, and I don't want this to take away from Shea or J-Dub or any of those great role players, because obviously the players have to play. Mm-hmm. But I do think, man, Sam Presti's absolutely the real MVP of this deal, man. He's the real engine to that entire machine. You know, the mastermind, the godfather. Like, I remember when he was getting going after losing Kevin Durant, they had to rebuild. Everyone was just calling him a 2K player because of, you know, all the crazy trades he was fucking mm-hmm. doing. And, you know, for him to kind of turn that around, because, like, you'd have to think, man, you know, when it came to Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and, you know, how long he kept them on the Thunder before eventually letting them go, you have to really look into these moves that he's made to, like, really understand his greatness. Because you lose someone like Kevin Durant, that should break your whole franchise apart. That should honestly end things. And they did have a couple of weird years, but then he rebounded into, like, that team that he had with Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, and, like, you know, all the depth that they had with that, had to break that down. And then when he had Shea, he brings in Chris Paul to mentor him. And then he brings in Al Horford to mentor those young guys. And it was really very strategically well placed. And, like, he just dominated, man. And, like he wins a ring probably ahead of schedule for, you know, where they were at, you know, with everything. I think everyone mm-hmm. was going to start putting them mm-hmm. On the clock next year. A lot of people kind of expected them to fade this year, but they won the ring, and now they can look forward to a dynasty with some of the best players in the game. You just saw SGA become the most paid player in the NBA right now. J-Dub just got his extension. You know, it's looking good, man. They got insane depth. They have several draft picks moving forward. So if anyone's worried, they're going to have their three guys locked in. They're going to have all these draft picks. They're going to have all these exceptions. Sam Presti, he knows what he's doing when he has to do it. I think we are truly looking at the next, you know, dynasty moving forward. I know there's a lot of other teams making some moves, but, you know, I just wanted to shout out to Sam Presti. I think he is absolutely different. Congrats to Oklahoma City Thunder again, one of the greatest seasons in NBA history, and Sam Presti finally gets his rings. And that's something I wanted to say last episode, but, you know, I wanted to throw that in here, man.
Okay, no problem, man. What I want to do, and I have no problem with that at all, I'm going to pivot to the East, as you stay in the West, right? Let's take a look at what was real clever that happened in this offseason that was kind of low radar, but still.
Right into low. Yeah, right into offseason.
You know, let's take a look at this, right? I think the Hawks, right, did something pretty fire, right? I'm going to be honest. Acquiring Kristaps Porzingis, you know,
for nothing.
For nothing. You know what I mean? Basically,
like it's really, you know, really I'm going to say
a bargain. Yeah, a bargain. You know what I mean? A 2-year mid-level exception and a future pick, you know what I mean? Swap, actually. Between New Orleans and Milwaukee, you know what I mean? But listen, the crazy thing about it is that it didn't cost anything. You know what I mean? It wasn't major. You know what I mean? It was just real, real quiet.
They're just going to pay his contract.
Exactly. But what it does for Atlanta, though, is it adds spacing, right? Something that they need. Like, this is stuff that they need. It adds rims protection. It also gives them the pick and pop ability in which they have always been kind of looking for in, like, the center when they had Capella, because they also needed him to pop out, but he doesn't actually shoot that well. You know what I mean? Right. So at the end of the day, you know what I mean? And all of the bigs that they've tried to insert since him, you know what I mean? But I think that that helps them in the lower part of the NBA, right, which is the Philly, Miami, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. Listen, man, that's what I wanted to kind of pivot into. You know what I mean? Coming from that, because I think Sam Presti did something amazing, but I think that Atlanta did something too. Yeah. And I think that they're just going to try to, they got the ability to be able to gobble up some of these pieces, you know what I mean, that may be available, to make themselves contenders as well.
And this is what I respect about Atlanta. So they can easily roll over like a lot of these other teams have. Like you've seen Detroit suck for so many years because they were really trying to focus on a big rebuild. You see the Charlotte Hornets, you know, they suck year after year. And then now that they have talent, they're not willing to, you know, kind of be aggressive when they need to be aggressive. You know, and like when it comes to Atlanta, they easily could have just traded off their players, traded off Trae Young years ago. They could have done that like 3 years ago, but they keep trying these different things. Like they brought in DeJounte Murray. Now they're bringing in Porzingis, but what I really want to point out is also their drafting has been magnificent as well, and the little moves that they've made. So like if you look at their team, and I'll put this in the edit, but if you look at their team right here, obviously Trae Young at point guard, but then you got one of the dude that almost won defensive player of the year, Dyson Daniels, at your two. And then you have a guy that people seem to be forgetting about that honestly really amazed a lot of people, really rose his stock, in Jalen Johnson. He was injured for the last, you know, couple months of the season last year, but Jalen Johnson's still there. And then you got the spacing that Jalen Johnson and Kristaps Porzingis is going to bring to this team. I think I love it, because what's going to happen is Trae Young is always double teamed, you know, bringing the ball down the court in crunch time. I think they're going to, that slowly takes other teams' abilities away from doing that. Trae Young is a fucking monster in the open court. I know I talk a lot of shit about Trae Young, but that's because I'm a Knicks fan. I've always been a huge fan of Trae Young. In the open court, when he's not being smothered, he is absolutely fucking amazing. And you got a Kongwu at center. I would like them to get like a taller center off the bench, just to, because he's small. So, and Porzingis is the tallest guy on the floor, but you have to put him at four because he's not a true, you know, big man. And then their bench is Luke Kennard, Nikhil Alexander Walker, Resacher, I think I might be mispronouncing his name a little bit there. Yeah, they're fucking, they're making moves, brother. I honestly fuck with it. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Kristaps Porzingis, but this is a team that he fits really well in, because the getting those passes from Trae Young, man, are going to be absolutely fucking insane. Whether he's in the three or he's driving, Trae Young is really, like, he honestly, I mean, he was the assist leader last year, but it's not bullshit assist. Like, it's not, he's not getting these assists in a bullshit way just because he has the ball. Like, he is actually turning into a top floor general in the game. So yeah, no, I like that fucking shout out. I honestly, one masterclass after another, I want to talk about it, man. And I know some people might not feel the same way, but I think the New York Knicks, the masterclass is still on, man. So to kind of open up, one of the big things is that the Knicks, they hired Mike Brown. So before I give my opinion, Kem, how do you feel about the hiring? Cause I get it. Mike Brown has had a lot of ups, but also probably double the downs in his career so far as a head coach.
What it looks like Mike Brown is really good at is getting guys going. What it seems like, what just seems to be the problem is the longevity you know what I mean,
right,
of the vision, you know what I mean, or how that longevity is communicated to the players, you know what I mean, because at the end of the day, he's always getting these guys game ready in the first, you know what I mean, or half of seasons that he has with teams, you know what I mean, they're always kind of, you know what I mean, the top five best product in the NBA, you know what I mean, like literally, but something always falls apart within that second season. They sneak up on people. He's a elite at defense as well. You know what I mean? So it's something, you know what I mean, that is going to help the Knicks, you know what I mean, which we already know these guys are defensive minded. So that's going to help with what they already had going on. But, man, it's just about the long term, you know what I mean, as it pertains to Mike Brown with me. I think that the acquisition, I like Jordan Clarkson, another bucket, you know what I mean, keeping McBride, you know what I mean, that's more buckets, you know what I mean, those a lot of the moves, the big guy, you know, shoring up, you know what I mean, some more rim protection and everything like that is going to be it's going to be okay. You know what I mean? And the core is still there. So now we just got to see what Mike Brown does with everything. It's going to be high expectation. We already know that. You know what I mean? This is New York. They made it to the conference championship. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like, I mean, it's going to be hard. You know what I mean? But the East is up for grabs. So at the end of the day, it's theirs for the taking. You know what I mean? So that's why I kind of, you know, talked about Atlanta, but we got the East totally, you know, when we start talking here, man, this is a lot of shit up for grabs. But I think that, you know, as it pertains to Mike Brown, we got to shit or get off the pot real quick.
Yeah, and I'll give a lot of insight real quick because, like, I had to, like, like, at first it was I needed to find a way to make myself happy with this hire. But then it was really easy. Because listen, first and foremost, as much as, you know, Mike Brown can be like fucking talked shit about, he's actually a really good fucking coach, man, like at the end of the day. And I think, like, when it comes to the Knicks, like, they fire Tom Thibodeau because they know that Tom Thibodeau can't win, you know, the big one. And Mike Brown, maybe he can't, you know, maybe he hasn't shown that ability yet. But I love Mike Brown, what he comes with, like, more than anything, like, because first, you know, you're keeping the same defensive mindset, right? Like, Mike Brown has always been, you know, this phenomenal defensive coach. You know, I think he grew in his time in Sacramento as a more offensive kind of coach as well. He started really dazzling with some of the offensive schemes he was running out there. He's a big voice in the locker room. I think that's what was missing with Tibbs. And there's a lot of reports coming out. You know, people were frustrated at how much he was babying Karl Anthony Towns. You know, how much that, you know, they weren't running practices when they should and weren't doing certain shit like they should. And like Jalen Brunson's father being one of the biggest voices on the team. I think he, if you guys look at, you know, certain clips that have come out, Mike Brown's, he's going to bitch Karl Anthony Towns. And hopefully what that turns into is Karl Anthony Towns being aggressive when he needs to be. Because that was the issue that I had with Tibbs, is when Karl Anthony Towns gets soft, which always happens, he needs that voice to fucking push him like Finch was in Minnesota towards the end of their run there. He needs that person to really just be like, yo, man, get out your fucking feelings. You're a fucking big dude. You're one of the top players in this game. Go fucking eat.
Yeah.
And that's what Karl Anthony Towns needs. And that's what fucking Mike Brown brings. I think Mike Brown is going to be fucking amazing for Mikal Bridges. I'm a little worried about the connection with Jalen Brunson, but Jalen Brunson's to that point where you just can give him the ball and he'll do what needs to be done.
Plus, he's not a diva, so it's not gonna, like, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, Jalen Brunson has done everything for the team.
Yeah,
he has not done shit for himself. Anywhere. Yeah,
like, you know what I mean?
You know, and I think that Mike Brown has gotten the short end of the stick in too many scenarios. And obviously, when a coach gets fired as many times as he has, you tend to make fun of him. But if you really look over his career, he was an assistant in San Antonio when they were in the dance. For Cleveland, he was LeBron's second head coach, I want to say, but he was the one that had success in Cleveland with Bron and them. And while a lot of people can point to LeBron James, the players around him, as much as people like to shit on them, they were decent role players. And why? It was because of Mike Brown's schemes, man. Like, there was a lot of dudes doing shit around LeBron, and they were getting a lot of defense out of it. And they were getting literally everything they could milk out of those fucking trash bags because of Mike Brown's schemes. And And look, he went to the Lakers. He enjoyed a decent season in the lockout year. Mm-hmm. But they fired him after five games that next year, just because mostly from what we're gathering is that locker room could not get together with Dwight and Kobe and Steve Nash and shit. So they kicked out Mike Brown after five games. And I get it. They were playing some terrible basketball, but how much do you really put into that? You only gave him five games to try to figure that shit out. And then, you know, he went back to Cleveland, and again, it was another short leash, one season, and he was fucking out of there. They didn't even have LeBron yet, at that time. So, you know, at 33 and 49, you know, they didn't even give him a chance. And then he went to be an assistant, with the Warriors. He learned a fucking lot, was a part of a big dynasty winning fucking culture. He got to feel what it was like to win a championship in the modern day fucking era. Not only just a championship, he won a couple of them things. And then he went back to the Kings and brought them to their first playoff appearance. And I don't know how fucking long, almost did it the second year. And then obviously he got fired a little bit through his third year. But I think that was also because players didn't, like, De'Aaron Fox was going through his contract stuff. He didn't really want to do too much on the court. He was frustrated. Sabonis was starting to get exposed a little bit. I don't put too much of that on Mike Brown. The front office was not making moves. We talked about that, you know, on the pod. About, you know, Sacramento, like, they had this great team and then they just decided to not fucking do anything, you know, with it. So with that all being said, taking all that into consideration, like you said, it's either shit or get off the pot. Mike Brown has been in those situations too much before, to where I think he's really going to hone in. Everyone on this team wants to prove something, including now your coach, because Tom Thibodeau, he ain't really trying to prove too much. He's just fucking there. Mike Brown's coming in with a chip on his shoulder. Like, y'all, like, the fucking league wants to keep fucking making fun of me. The league wants to keep, you know, fucking with me. Now I got the best team that I'm ever going to fucking have. Let's fucking run it. And, you know, I'm honestly, I could get my heart crushed at the end of this, but I love the signing. I love the signing. And then, you know, to throw the Knicks depth chart up there too, because they've made some really, I honestly think they were good moves. A lot of people might think that Jordan Clarkson's a little washed up because his shooting numbers are down. But the addition of him and Yabusele, I fucking love, because we needed a backup big and a scorer off the bench. Both things were handled. Didn't tear up the team for Giannis yet. Didn't tear up the team, you know, for LeBron. Didn't tear up the team for fucking Kevin Durant. Running it back with Brunson, Bridges, Hart, Ananobi, Towns. Mitchell Robinson's going to be there still. Miles McBride. We've got a lot of young dudes in the third string that, you know, can start fucking learning. I'm fucking thoroughly enjoying the Knicks right now, man.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I agree with you. Let's see.
How did you feel about the Miles Turner acquisition for the Bucks? Cause that was weird, man. So Damian Lillard gets waived. Mm-hmm. And then they stretch out, you know, that money into yep. Miles Turner, however mm-hmm. the hell that works. Mm-hmm. So Dame is out. Mm-hmm. Miles Turner is in. Mm-hmm. How do you feel, man?
Well, I mean, I think it was something that they needed to do. They're doing a lot to try and, you know, ensure Giannis that he's going to have a competitive roster to come back to right. after he's done off of his family yeah. vacation and everything like that. But what they lost is a point guard. You know what I mean? Right. There aren't too many of those. You know what I mean? At this time in the NBA, you know what I mean? Up for trade. So it's going to cost them a little bit more to try and shore up that position. I think that, come on, man. I think that, so now what I'll say is you get some younger rim protection. All right. Let's get into that. You'll get some younger rim protection, but he's one of those guys who doesn't really like to play down in the paint either. He's a younger Brook Lopez. You know what I mean? With kind of a little bit more explosivity. You know what I mean? In his step right now.
He can go on heaters, man.
Yes, you know what
like,
I mean?
I get it. Like, you know, fucking whatever happened in the fucking finals.
Yes.
But
he'll be utilized and expected, you know what I mean, to take those shots more than the ball will be peppered around like in a Indiana
type. Right, you understand
what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, he will be expected. We knew Brooke was getting a good 5 to 10 of those a game. You understand what I'm saying? Just being in the corner. So at the end of the day, you know what I mean? I think it's a nice pickup, but I don't know how much it moves the needle, you know what I mean, for Milwaukee, you know what I mean, without a, you know, a three-point shooter.
I'll say this, man. Mm-hmm. I'll absolutely say this.
Bobby Portis back. I love everything else that they did, you know what I mean, to keep everybody else, you know what I mean? Everybody else is coming back, Porter Jr., all of them. But
I love it, man. No I think, I think you know, Miles Turner, I think – So I like it on both ends, because when it comes to Indiana, like, mm-hmm. you don't really know what your identity is going to be without Tyrese Haliburton. Mm-hmm. But the one thing you notice in watching the Pacers this year is there's often times that Miles Turner just did not fit mm-hmm. into anything that was going on. And oftentimes he's either not getting the ball, mm-hmm. not active anywhere, or just on the bench. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So for the Pacers moving forward, knowing that they were one game away from winning the finals and knowing that Tyrese Haliburton tore his Achilles and is going to be out most likely the entire season, or at least you'll get a version of him back that's like trying to get his, you know, mm-hmm. NBA legs back under mm-hmm. him. I think it was a good idea to just not overpay Miles Turner. Well, and I don't think it's an overpayment, $25 million a year, mm-hmm. but not give him a contract, see what other, you know, things you have open and what else you can do. But for the Bucks, man, mm-hmm. Miles Turner is going to be in a role for like one of the first times of his career where he don't have to be dependent on as the big man. Does he block shots? Is he decent in the paint when he actually plays in there? Absolutely. But you have Giannis now. Giannis is a fucking beast. Granted, if he stays in Milwaukee. But if Giannis is going to be there being the aggressive one, they're going to often forget about Miles Turner, who's just going to be out there for the three, out there for the midi. Guy that'll just drive by and blow by your entire defense because of how strong he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, then on the defensive end, he's just going to be needed when Giannis can't be in the paint. So I honestly fuck with it. Dame, letting go of Dame. How did you feel about that part? Because I know a lot of people have their opinions on that.
Well, I think that, he's still getting paid. You know what I mean? And he can still get picked up. So at the end of the day, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to get picked up, you know, by another team once he's healthy.
For again. The low, too, because he don't need money.
Absolutely, because that's going to still be paid out to him over the next 5 years. So at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying?
Like, he's crazy, bro.
Yeah, he does not lose, you know what I mean? And come on, man, get back Dame time. You know what I mean? We love it. You know what I'm saying? I think that a lot of this has to do with him rushing back because of Giannis's expectations as well. You understand what I'm saying? I think that he re-injures, you know what I mean? Because these soft tissue injuries and these, you know, hammies and everything like that, like, this shit has to be healed 100%. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because he strained his entire, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was his Achilles at the end of last playoff run, mm-hmm. where he couldn't even jump or nothing in the last couple games.
So, like, he needs to, you know, and I think that's what the waving is really about. You know what I mean? It's when he comes back, he's going to be on his time, and the risk is up to whoever's, you know what I mean, inherits or pays him, you know what I mean, going forward, and, you know?
And, like, listen, I'm not saying, like, a torn Achilles is good or anything, but I truly feel like Dame, if there was anyone in the NBA that needed a break for a little bit, mm-hmm. I think it was Dame. Because, mm-hmm. like, you know, leaving, like, talking all that loyalty shit, and then finally getting, you know, traded to Milwaukee, mm-hmm. goes through the divorce, mm-hmm. goes through these crazy expectations that are in Milwaukee, just a toxic, you know, spot, not being able to really do what he fully wanted to mm-hmm. in either playoff run this year or last year. Good numbers, but not, mm-hmm. you know, couldn't play last season to close the series mm-hmm. this year, towards Achilles. I think it's going to be good for him to kind of refresh, take a step back, you know, view the league from a different, you know, angle, so that he can come and give us, you know, a fantastic end of his career. Because that's one thing about him, is he is determined. He's never going to lose his shot. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to be putting up shots even with the fucking torn Achilles mm-hmm. in the gym. Mm-hmm. So I still think, I think he can give us a good more 3-4 year end of the run there. And it'll be interesting to see if anybody picks him up. I personally mm-hmm. think he should go, you know, sign at like the All-Star break or something when he's almost getting, mm-hmm. you know, ready to get back, mm-hmm. You know, kind of just join a team that looks really healthy and mm-hmm. just, you know, see where it goes. But
come on to the Lakers. Man,
let's go. speaking of the Lakers, man, mm-hmm. You know, I'll let you go, man, because the Lakers fans, I'll say this, man. So before the Ayton signing, y'all mm-hmm. motherfuckers were in shambles. Mm-hmm. And I get it, rightfully so. Like, it looked mm-hmm. like nothing was going to happen. And then getting Ayton, who, I mean, listen, I'm not saying you, but most mm-hmm. Lakers fans were one of the first ones to make fun of DeAndre Ayton and kind of like say he ain't this and he ain't that. Mm-hmm. And then now all of a sudden that they get him, it's like, oh, we back. We got our center. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that whole thing?
Well, I think that what part? I mean, because, man, me being a Laker fan, that would be have to be a whole nother segment. You know what I mean? Because I would go, you know what I mean, through different things. You know what I mean? But as it pertains to the Ayton trade, you know what I mean? I'll stay right there. You know what I mean? As it pertains to the Ayton trade, I think that is something that is needed. I think that his productivity, you know what I mean, what we got him for, the expectation isn't that much higher than what we have for Jackson Hayes. You understand what I'm saying? But it is what is expected. You understand what I'm saying? From, you know what I mean, the center position. Now, at the end of the day, come on, stop playing. As far as the mid-range and all that kind of thing go, he's buckets. He's crack. You understand what I'm saying? He can get all of that for you. What it's going to be is if he's actually able to temper that diva attitude and just play winning basketball for the collective, you know what I mean, which LA is about, championships. You understand what I'm saying? So if he's able to, you know what I mean, get in line with that, you understand what I'm saying? Like, we're going to be good. Like, it ain't nothing, you know what I mean?
Because people got to, like, not forget, he's a number one fucking pick, man. He's, like, without question. He's like, talented. Come on,
stop playing. But I think
he's around the right players, bro, because you're putting him next to LeBron. You're putting him next to Luka. If there's anyone that could lock in a player, it would be those two. Because, like, Luka's been fucking laser locked in this offseason, man. That's the whole thing that people are like seem to forget is that, like, you're getting a good Luka, but you're about to get an in shape, locked in, Laker way, like Luka Doncic. Like, he's getting his body ready to have a rest of, like, a fucking Lakers legacy run. That's the way I see it. When it comes to Ayton, man, all the Lakers need is they need someone to go get the fucking boards, be somewhat of a present on defense, and put the bucket in.
Pay attention to Luka. Be ready to, you know what I mean, go get it. You know what I mean? Watch for the
and vibe. This is, right, and this is the first time that Ayton's going to be playing with not so much expectations on his shoulder. Because you remember in Phoenix,
of course,
everyone's looking at DeAndre Ayton like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're not bringing us to where we need to go. And he's just entering the fucking league. And then he goes to the Portland and as like one of the only fucking good players. And, you know, the success is going to depend on whether he can be that guy or not.
And that's never going to happen in Portland with that collection of, you know what I mean? Like low level, you know what I mean? Players. So.
So, you know, coming to the Lakers, the only thing I don't like about the Lakers right now is I think they need defense, man. Like, I'm like looking at a lineup of Luka, LeBron, Austin Reeves and DeAndre Ayton, I'm a little nervous because a lot of teams are going to shit on y'all if that's what y'all, you know, run into. I would like to see y'all like trade Rui and somehow bring in like a fucking guy that can, that's a real dog on defense, because I think that's all you need at this point.
Well, we'll see. It's not over. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, there's still a whole lot to talk about. You know what I mean? There's a whole new ownership group here, man, that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was something.
You know, that's trying to establish something as well. You know what I mean? I think that, you know, along with your take last week about LeBron has something to do with his take, you know what I mean? Or what Rich Paul, you know what I mean, actually put out there, you know what I mean, was trying to establish, you know what I mean, basically, you know what I mean, their standoffish position with clutch sports, you know what I mean, and what LeBron is looking for. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I think that the new ownership group paying the tab that they did, you know what I mean, it's still about championships. It's nothing.
Yeah, and I think like,
you know what I mean?
No matter what happens with LeBron, like, y'all got Luka.
Yeah.
And like, people, I think the Mavericks unfortunately did a good job to shit on Luka's image. I'll just say that. They really pushed out there in the media that he was out of shape, that he, you know, wasn't really willing to do what the franchise needed him to do. But on the other end of that, Luka's still a guy that dragged, you know, sorry Mavericks teams to playoff rounds that they should not have been in. They made a final run literally 2 years ago. And as much as the addition to Kyrie helps that, it's also from the top of Luka. When he is on, when he is locked in, you saw it with the Lakers too. He cannot be stopped. And his offense is his defense, because when he goes on those heaters, you know, teams on the offensive end, they get pressured. And honestly, like, it's going to be a fucking good run, because now
you're lucky I'm a little bit tired, because I would argue that point. I do not.
No, go ahead. Argue it.
No, I do not agree with offense for defense in no kind of way. You understand what I'm saying? No, not at all. Like, no, listen, your offense is your best weapon. Your defense is also your weapon. You understand what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, I believe that the committal, this is what him getting in shape is also going to reflect. It's not just going to reflect a physique or anything like that. It's going to be a commitment to defense. You understand what I'm saying?
And he's shown that he can play defense.
Yeah, but not in the playoffs. Not in this playoffs. Yeah. That matchup was exposed and hunted. You understand what I'm saying? Like, so at the end of the day, you know what I mean? It's one of those things that, listen, man, I love it. And I'm not, you know what I mean? I don't want to do that. You know what I'm saying? But that is the part that just, with the collective working out and getting himself together, has something to do with defense, brother. It really
yeah,
does.
But at the offensive same package time,
is not going anywhere. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying?
But at the same time, I'm gonna argue about the offense's defense, because you gotta think about it, right? And the best example before Luka was James Harden, right? And the Warriors dynasty, and you know that whole thing. When you have a player like James Harden, like Luka, like Steph, that can make buckets, but also consistently make buckets, go on absolute fucking heaters. That puts the offense in a position of not running their normal strategies, but actually being lit with a fire under their ass. They're fucking up a little bit more because they know no matter what they do on the offensive end, the other end is going to be fucking
crazy. See, you fucked up.
Crazy.
See, you fucked and up. You fucked up because you talk about two totally different types of offense. You're talking about you're talking about Golden State Warriors, which is a motion offense, which is predicated off of movement and everything like that. But the primary in that motion offense is Steph Curry. You understand what I'm saying? To where he is able to get up the amount of shots and, you know what I mean, things like that.
Right.
With James Harden, what became his thing was the pick and roll and rip throughs, which, you know what I mean, was able to kind of change. Those are two totally different things. And now check it out. In James Harden getting a whole bunch of fouls and going to the line a bunch of times and different things like that, there still was the hindrance of his defensive, you understand what I'm saying? And hunting the rip throughs and things like that is what also made him cold in most of those games, you understand what I'm saying, through that style of play. You understand what I'm saying? That didn't help the collective. When it comes to Steph Curry in that same instance, because it's a motion offense and the Golden State Warriors was a top-ranked defense in every championship year, those are two totally different types of, you know what I mean? Like,
right, but my biggest point in bringing that up is that you look at the Warriors with Steph.
Mm-hmm.
Steph was, at many times, not a guy you wanted out there on defense, but they were able to get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
On the Rockets, obviously, James Harden, not a good defender at all. They were absolutely able to get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being is because their offense is so good. It has opposing offenses on their heels. Because like I said, especially with Luka, and I'm telling you this year, you're going to see it. Luka's going to go on these runs where, you know what Luka does. Sometimes he'll put up 10 points in a row, 15 points in a row. He'll make the big plays, big threes, whatever. What that does is your opposing offenses now are like, they're thinking a lot, making a little bit more mistakes. They're putting way too much into it because they know on the other end you have a hot Luka, and that it's fucking dangerous, man.
Bro, that is normal. That's basketball. That's normal. Listen, man, that's normal. That's why OKC, I'm going to tell you something. For the past 2 years and this year, this past season in which they won the championship in particular, you understand what I'm saying? The defense is also the thing that won the championship. It wasn't just that they could, because they shot, they don't even shoot threes that well. You know what I mean? Like they're, you know what I mean? They actually played a midi very, very well and played very good defense and score a lot of transition buckets off of their defense. I'm telling you now, if you think that you can just play offense, you understand what I'm saying, and outshoot a motherfucker, you in for a short game. That's why leads, 20-point leads don't mean nothing. Why do you think your New York Knicks, if you want to talk about it, came back so much? It's because of bad defense, not because of good offense. It's, you know what I mean? Like, good offense is a part of it because, you know what I mean, that's basketball. But we're talking about the committal to defense is something that is a sustainable thing that is just as sustainable as good offense, brother. I'm telling you that. I'm telling you. Because at the end of the day, you would not, when we're talking about these particular players in a free-flowing style of just say pick and roll basketball, the weakest man is always hunted out. It ain't no, there's no question around that. In a Steph is hunted, Luka is hunted, James Harden, all three of these guys that we're talking about are all hunted. Every single time there is a high IQ point guard or point forward, you know what I mean, that can actually take control of either wing, you understand what I'm saying, of the basketball court to create a mismatch. That is why, bro, you can't, no, man, even if they shoot threes like that, because at the end of the day, once the defense catch up, we also have to make buckets. And that is something that basketball is relying on, man. I don't know, bro. I love Luka, and I am praying that part is something that is a part of the new look Luka, is that he can, I'm going to steal motherfucking Kendrick Perkins shit that he can literally slide them puppies, bro. We need him to be able to slide them puppies, man, and be able to move, you know what I mean, and stay in front of somebody. Yeah. Just stay in front of them, bro. You know what I mean? Take more offensive. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to see no layups and shit like that. People switching to the left hand real easy because you just let them, you know what I mean, go by. You know what I mean? Like, I hear you, man.
Do you have any do you have any other takes? I have a few on free agency, but I'm ready to move on.
Yeah, I don't care. No.
All right, bet. Yeah, good conversation about free agency. You know, let's go. Let's get it testy. I like it. So what is your actual opinion on Kevin Durant and his career? I think the reason why, you know, I put this segment into the script is because, you know, there's a lot of people that have, I feel like Kevin Durant's one of those players. You either have an extremely good opinion of Kevin Durant or you have an extremely bad opinion of Kevin Durant. What's your actual opinion on his career?
Now, I'm going to be honest, man. It took me a little bit of work, right? But I'm going to put it like this, right? Kevin Durant is easily the NBA's greatest shapeshifter, right? The only superstar who literally could have played and been the best player on any team in any era without ever needing the ball to prove it. I don't know what you think, but that's what I think. I also believe, right, while other stars need systems or usage, KD is basically a system by himself. It's kind of cool to realize and watch the maturation of KD's career, right? Because there was a time where, you know what I mean, he was just a pull-up jumper guy. You understand what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Then you also, from there, you start seeing the rest of the things.
He said that, like, on that interview with Steve Nash and LeBron James, like, coming into the league, he was just kind of a,
like,
you know.
Yeah, like, see, like, and that's, again, what athleticism is, just knowing that you can just pull up and jump higher than the dude to get your cleaner look. No, I'm being serious, bro.
I know.
And then the shit that we love is when they start putting those pieces together. The reason why Jalen Green was traded for Kevin Durant because he never developed, you know what I mean, a consistent piece that was reliable, right? Look, he could drop 30, you know what I mean, as an option or slide into a team, right, of two other alphas. He did it, right, and still be the most efficient scorer on the floor, right? From OKC's chaos to the Warriors' machine, right, to that motherfucking toe being on the line in Brooklyn. Right now to Phoenix and now to Houston. KD, man, I can't say nothing more, man. There's never been a 7-footer, right? Who could blend
in? You don't
know
what his fucking
word up, man. Who could blend in and stand out like him, man? You know what I mean? That's all I'm gonna have to say, man. A unicorn, you know what I mean? A unicorn,
yeah,
and just a simple plug and play, literal player is fucking amazing.
And there's like, man, there's
he
just,
made me go to write something.
There's so many people on social media that just blast this dude, man. And honestly,
they don't know,
like,
basketball,
right? And like, I get it because, you know, he only has two championships, one MVP, whatever, you know, you want to say there. I somewhat get it, you know. But at the end of the day, I'll say this, and I get it. Most players, they have the control of their career and their journey in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Kevin Durant, man, look, you know, OKC, people got to remember just how fucking good Kevin Durant was in OKC. We're talking,
and that was chaos.
Yeah, 32 points a game, which isn't, you know, like, it. That part there isn't the thing that stands out. It's the part that how efficient he was scoring 32 points per game. He had the most efficient season in like 10 years up to that point on that, you know, level of how much points he was scoring. Not only that, he did 50, 40, 90 the year prior to the MVP year. And this is stuff, like you said, from like a dude that as tall as he is, he really needs to take care of his body. You know, he has to be eating the right shit, all that stuff to actually be a healthy human being, first and foremost. And, you know, when it came to OKC, you know, was some of it on Kevin Durant as to why they didn't win? You know, sure. I mean, but also at the end of the day, man, like, you know, Sam Presti was still trying to learn, you know, how to really ball. Like, I don't think the right head coaches were in there. I think, you know, Russell Westbrook, love Russell Westbrook, but like when it came to Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, I don't think Westbrook was the best for Kevin Durant towards the end of their run. Just because, like, you know, Westbrook was trying to establish his legacy, Kevin Durant trying to establish his, you know, they both had their own agendas, it felt like. And Westbrook got to fucking put that shit on the main stage when Kevin Durant left, just so we could finally see just how good Westbrook is. But when you have those, when you have those two together, it wasn't the best, you know, towards the end. And then, like, he goes to Golden State, and honestly, I said it then, I'll say it now, I respected the fuck out of that move, because at the end of the day, you know, the goal to play basketball is to win, and if the Oklahoma City Thunder is going to sit Kevin Durant down and say, we're going to run this team back again next year, why would you stay there? You guys just were up 3-1 on the Warriors, and no one could close. No one on that fucking team could close. The coach couldn't come up with the right strategy to close. They all fucking blew it collectively. And then you get the team that calls you up, one of the best teams in the whole NBA, that's going to give you the money that you're worth. Not only that, but they're also going to say, yo, come ball, let's win some championships. He basically did what LeBron did going to Miami. And I get it. Miami, they were not champions right before LeBron got there. They were not the best team right before he got there. But they all went there together. You knew it was going to be a super team. You knew it was going to be a winner. And that was the same thing that Kevin Durant did. And honestly, more players should do that. Realize, go win your fucking championships, and then come and, you know, try to win your legacy championships, which he tried to do in Brooklyn. You talk about Brooklyn and toe on the line. Bro, if James Harden wasn't fucking out of shape, or if Kyrie just, you know, stayed on the court, this is a whole different story that we're telling. Giannis doesn't have a fucking championship. Like, we're like they blow the Hawks out of the water the next round, and they blow the Suns out of the water that next round after that. KD was on a run, but then, you know, and that's after he tore his Achilles. Like, people just completely forgot that he put his Achilles on the line for the Warriors, trying to come back while he was hurt. Popped that shit, was gone for a year. And then, like I said, with the Nets, I don't think it was his fault, because James Harden was constantly out of shape, constantly hurting his hamstring. Kyrie didn't want to stay on the fucking court and play ball. We know with the, you know, the shit that was going on outside of the NBA, and then also he was hurt on the court as well. And then he goes to Phoenix, and they had something nice heating up when he first got there, but they threw it all fucking away with Bradley Beal. So, like, how, what are they supposed to do when Bradley Beal is your third option, making a super max contract, and he's not even capable of being a fucking third option? What can Kevin Durant really do about that besides what he did? He put up solid numbers. He put up solid splits. He's had two really healthy seasons in a row the last couple of years, and now he's going to go to the Rockets. And man, if I was a betting man, knowing everything that goes on, if Kevin Durant stays healthy and that team stays cool, I wouldn't be shocked if they win a ring, man.
Yeah.
They got something really nice going on over there.
Hey, man, I want to tell you something, man. A lot of people never won shit, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People never won shit. And sometimes people don't know what goes into winning shit, you know?
Right.
And a lot of people, literally, bro. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's why people have these fucking crazy ass opinions about what goes into winning. You know what I mean? Sometimes, right, man, people call you. Sometimes you may, right, have the power to be able to be like, yo, bro, if we do this, we can actually do some shit. You understand, right, what I'm saying? Like, yeah. And like you said, like, depending on where you are in your career, you are supposed, right, to make those moves. You know what I mean? To actually,
yeah,
get, you know what I mean? Like, you know, this is what you do.
It's like, what's it going to be? Stays in OKC. You know, they fail more years in a row, and he gets more scrutinized that way than I think he did going to the Warriors.
You know, I don't know the ins and outs. You know what I mean? I know that they were teammates, though. You understand what, yeah, I'm saying? Like, real shit. Him and Russ, and they were teammates. So, at the end of the day, I don't know what went into that, but it is a story that they reached out to him to come to Golden State. You know what I'm saying? But again, him and Russ were teammates, and I don't know the nature of that relationship. You know what I mean? So, right, at the end of the day, you know, still, you know what I mean, as it pertains to your career, you know what I mean, to learn how to do something, you know what, yeah, I mean? Like, you equated to LeBron and Miami, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, you know what I mean? It looks a little the same, you know what I mean? And the result after for both of them is pretty similar. You know what I mean? Not that much, but you know what I mean? That,
right,
since tearing, yeah, that Achilles, he has not shot under 50. 90.
Right,
you
bro.
You understand what I'm saying? So that man is,
and that's what I'm saying. He's fucking baller, bro. Yeah, and I think people are gonna miss this dude when he's gone, man. Because when you talk about straight up ball, straight up hoops, it's fucking Kevin Durant, man.
Without a question.
Like, he is like so like that shot, like you could teach fucking millions of kids that
unlimited.
Shot and
it'll
be automatic. Like, yes. You know what I mean? So, man, but moving on though, who, and this is a good segue, who is your most, your top five most talented players ever in NBA history?
Easy.
So it's not your top five all time, not your GOAT list, but the top five most talented.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Specifically. Most talented. Yes. And I'm gonna be short and sweet. I ain't even gonna drag this out. Number one, I got 6'9", 290 pounds with the vision of Magic. The speed of a guard. And they say he got the IQ of a coach, even though publicly I hate the shit that he says sometimes. LeBron James, right? Listen, the most complete package, regardless. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
His mental tools, you know what I'm saying? All that shit, man, how he's game ready and games up. All that kind of stuff, the model guy, you know what I mean? All that type of shit. Listen, without a doubt, the most talented player.
With all the shit that he got to put up with the media.
Without a question, man. Number two, I got to go with who is my also my GOAT, man. It's going to be Michael Jordan, okay? His first step, come on, still look at that, okay? His footwork, look at that. Mid-range, world fucking class. All right. Next level competitiveness. Some of these things that people try to play down, but some of these things we do not see that much anymore. That's like raw talent meeting killer instinct. You understand what I'm saying? Like it's one of those type of things, right? Then we're going to go to Kobe Bean Bryant, man. You know, this is kind of in the, you know, this is a mixed order of some of the people that I love anyway, if we were ever to, you know what I mean, kind of go over Mount Rushmore's one, twos, and threes all over again. Right? But listen, after, you know what I mean, after, you know, that explosive first step and that elite footwork of Michael Jordan, you get a young Kobe Bean Bryant who only wants to study the best and be the best and becomes the most skilled player that my two eyes have seen. You understand what I'm saying? When it comes to mixing up the bag, right hand, left hand, you know what I mean? What he's doing one time to what he's doing the next time. Come on, without a question. Footwork, post up, three-level scoring. Defensively, what I didn't say something about, you know what I mean, a six-time all-defensive guy, one up before, Michael Jordan. But come on, Kobe again had that too in which he studied. But all package, and he was obsessive. That work ethic, everybody just talks about that shit. Number four, we just had him in the last segment. I don't even have to say it. We're going to go into Kevin Durant. And then number five, right? I said something about him earlier, right? You sometimes have some crazy takes about this man, right? But I'm going to say, man, listen, Magic Johnson at 6'9", listen, man, could play one through five, passing vision, the best you ever seen, made basketball look crazy because he didn't always have to score. It's a crazy, crazy thing, right?
Well, I mean, when it comes to Magic, like the only negative take I really have about him is that I don't think he's higher than Steph on the all-time list.
Gotcha.
Other than that, man, yeah, that and this, oh, yo, bro.
Now, am I going 10? I'm going 10 or 5?
Not 5.
All right, good.
If you have any honorable mentions, definitely go for it.
And my honorable mention, listen, right, and I'm going to be crazy with this, man. Well, not crazy, but this shit is crazy. My honorable mention consists of two people, but I'm going to just go with the Kyrie Irving.
Yes. Yes.
Kyrie Irving. Okay. Literally. Unreal creativity. Pure talent. Pure sorcery. Ambidextrous. Like that way. Like it looks nice and beautiful and put together either way. You know what I mean?
It's art.
It's beautiful. But those are mine. That's my five.
Okay. My honorable mentions, man, listen, you're going to think I'm crazy. Like, this list was so hard for me because I absolutely wanted to make sure there was three guys included in here that maybe you wouldn't put them over Jordan and Kobe in this, but I had to put them in my top five to highlight their talent. So I did leave Jordan and Kobe off, but not to be disrespectful to Jordan and Kobe. I just really want to highlight these other guys. So when it comes to Jordan, all around, like you said, the first step, the mid-range, the fucking, the paint ability, you know, did lack a little bit at the three, but made up for, you know, it wasn't even a three-point league at the time. And then Kobe, you know, did miss a lot of shots, but is still the whole package. You know, but my other honorable mentions, I had Chris Paul. Wilt Chamberlain, okay. Kevin Garnett. Like when it comes to Chris Paul, I had to highlight him here because like I get it. I didn't win a championship, but when you really think about the talent, the passing abilities, not turning over the ball, you know, being able to score as much as he did as well, and then also being a threat on the defensive end, you know, definitely do like Chris Paul. But number five,
okay,
I'm going with Hakeem Olajuwon. I didn't put too many centers on this list, but that is the one center that I will put on the list when it comes to Hakeem, because not only was he the force he was, you know, on the offensive level, like I've like watching his tapes is one of the most exciting tapes I've ever watched. Just his post moves, the way he can just absolutely just crack any defender, doesn't matter who the hell is on him. And then also his ability on the other end, you know, with, you know, the blocks and the defense and everything. I think Hakeem Olajuwon is definitely, I wish more kids would talk about, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Number four, I got Kevin Durant, man. You know, it's everything that we talked about before. Mm-hmm. You know, the footwork, the solid shot, the shot that's never changed, never will change, is one of the best shots that you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. And then also he's been capable on defense. It's just, you know, certain times he has to do so much on offense that he does have to take a little step back on defense. But we saw in Golden State how much of a monster he can be on that defensive end.
Yes.
Number three, and this might be a surprise, I wanted to throw in Kawhi Leonard. And the reason why I wanted to throw in Kawhi Leonard is because at the top of his game, at his best, he was one of the most locked down players on defense that we have ever fucking seen. And then what he was able to do throughout his career is he was able to learn that Kobe fucking jump shot from the mid-range and also be able to knock down fucking threes. And then obviously he can get into the fucking paint. But yeah, no, Kobe like was a big influence on Kawhi with his mid-ranger. I'm not saying that the Kawhi mid-ranger is Kobe's mid-range, mm-hmm. But Kobe did teach him a lot and really, you know, invent that really good mid-range that we see from Kawhi. And like, bro, we say it all the time. I mean, we still sit here and we count the Clippers in sometimes because of fucking what Kawhi can just magically do. And I think anyone that can give Canada a fucking championship in an American sport is pretty fucking badass to me. But number two, I got LeBron James. Probably should be number one on this list, but number two, it's everything that's ever been talked about him on the offense. He can shoot the three, shoot the mid-range. He can fucking fade away. He can get in the paint. He's a monster in the paint. He can fucking, you know, he can pass the ball. Obviously, they call him a pass-first guy. He has the big IQ. On the defensive end, he has shown shades throughout his career where he can play on that defensive end of the ball. But number one, man, I'm going to go with Kyrie Irving, brother.
The more tape that I'm
also going back and looking at for Kyrie Irving, man, Kyrie Irving is, in my eyes, the most skilled offensive player we have ever seen. You know, the way he's able to just not only dribble the ball, but all the fucking moves that he's able to do. He's a three-level scorer, but one of the best three-level scorers we're ever going to fucking see. One of the most clutch players we're going to see. Like, I mean, we're still seeing him hit game winners. You know, the crossover, like he is, I'm saying, man, if he never let the outside of basketball get involved, Kyrie, we're talking about a fucking multi-time MVP, multi-championships, because he's just fucking unstoppable, bro. That's my fucking list.
I don't have a problem with that. I love that list.
I thought I was gonna piss you off by not including fucking Jordan and Kobe.
No, you don't have to.
I absolutely had to fucking talk about Kawhi, Olajuwon, and fucking Irving when we talk about like.
And pure, see, this is crazy because we better not break this, because at the end of the day, for you to put a top five talents is somebody being somebody that is Kawhi Leonard, who is such a short lifespan, you have to understand now. I think your perspective is kind of changing on what different is and how a motherfucker can be different, because sometimes it's not a straight line. You know what I mean? Yeah. A motherfucker might, you know, like literally.
Some people are going to get more fortunate than others.
Like
LeBron was able to fucking put all of his money into his body.
Yes,
and like more people should do that. But some people, you know, some people either don't, or some, you know, with Kawhi, it's when you're as good as you are on both ends of the basketball, like T-Mac, when you're doing as much as you are with the basketball, with Kyrie Irving, when you're doing as much as you do with the basketball, you're going to get hurt. Derrick Rose, like the list goes on and on of those guys that can't stay healthy is because everything they bring to the table wears on them extremely. But when it comes to Kawhi Leonard, man, there's a fucking reason why with these bum ass Clippers, we're always giving them a fucking chance.
Yeah.
Because of that man right there. We know how dangerous he is. But yeah, let's talk real quick, like very, very fast. Let's talk some fucking baseball, man.
All right, I got some quick hit questions for you that I need some quick answers from. All right. It's a few questions. All right, bro. All right. I kind of dialed in a little bit, so just tell me. Question number one, is Shohei Ohtani the greatest talent you've ever seen?
Oh, that I've ever seen, absolutely, because I didn't witness the career of Barry Bonds, but I also think that, you know, when it comes to baseball, and I pointed this out on our last baseball episode in regards to Cal Riley being a catcher and being as good as he is, like when you think of Shohei, when he is at the top of his game pitching and hitting, do you know what really goes into all that? His, when he's practicing and all that shit, he has to not only take swings and also work on his swing, he also has to work on being a pitcher. So he's putting in double the time than everybody else. And I get it. A lot of it is natural talent, but you have to continue to hone that talent. And he has to do that. He always has to fucking pitch and hit and all this other shit. Mm-hmm. Like he had to have Tommy John surgery, but he was still able to go out there and be a fucking hitter and hit 50 home runs and 50 steals. I think so, man. And like if people want to bring up fucking Babe Ruth or whatever the fuck, like you have, like Babe Ruth did that for one season where he pitched and hit. Shohei Ohtani has done that in multiple seasons, and he's done it better than Babe Ruth did in that one season. And he's done it multiple times in a league that's fucking hard today, man. Like baseball is a hard ass league. You can't just take fucking steroids and shit no more. It's full fucking talent.
All right. So since talking about that, will anyone ever hit 60 homers again? Clean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it might not happen. Like, I mean, there's one player that might actually do it this year in Cal Riley.
And listen, he's actually a good catcher too. It's not like he just can hit. Like he'll gun your ass down and try to steal him.
Yeah.
Which leads into my next question. Sorry.
And then I think fucking, you know, Aaron Judge, obviously he can always, you know, he did hit 60 like a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think it's doable. I mean, all you need is a power hitter that fucking plays the whole season and remains consistent.
Okay.
And that's crazy. Like when it comes to Aaron Judge, I'll give him his props, is that he's not the most consistent player. He has a lot of cold stretches, especially in the playoffs, but he still has so much power that he'll give you a 50, 60 home run season, which is fucking insane, man. Mm-hmm. If he goes through a whole year and doesn't have a cold stretch, Barry Bonds' record gets fucking shattered.
Mm. Okay.
We have more players like that coming up, like Jack Caglione. He's coming up. He has a fucking big swing. You know, there's a lot of other players that I'm blanking out on, but it'll be done.
So speaking on that, right, we went from Cal Raleigh being a catcher and everything. Like, so tell me, there's been an increase, right? But are stolen bases back or just for the moment? The rule change of spike steals, but will it stick?
I think there'll always be stolen bases. I mean, I don't like the rules have enhanced it a little bit. But I think like if you have a fast play, like fast players are not going to go away. That's the number one thing. Stealing will always be into a strategy. I don't think so, man.
Okay. Speaking on strategy though, is the shift ban a good or bad? Is it good or bad for the game? Speaking on strategy, do you think the shift ban is good or bad for the game?
I think it's good. And like people will disagree.
Because you said cause, strategy, like, and I know that the shift, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, because when it comes to the shift, I don't think. How do I put this, man? It's think about for basketball, and you have all these motherfuckers just chucking threes, right? Like from far away, whatever. It's like it's part of the game, but it's not beautiful for the game. It's not good for the game. Mm-hmm. You would agree with that, like players just fucking chucking threes from far away and shit. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, in baseball, the shift, there should not be a situation where we're throwing all of our players on one fucking side of the field because a player can't hit to the other side of the field. Mm-hmm. I think it's just bad for the game, and I'm glad they did take that step because it's not like players can't move a little bit, but they can't move past certain areas. But like when we have it to where we're putting all of our guys on one side and maybe one guy on the other just in case. Yeah. It's not good for the game, bro.
They can't hit to the opposite side of the field. So, I understand. Okay, no problem. So now there's a couple more I got for you, right? So now this is a what-if scenario, right? With no injuries, right? Top five, right? Think Ken Griffey Jr. with no injuries versus Jose Fernandez. Had he
lived. With no death.
I said had he lived, bro. Be easy, man. Yeah. Jesus, man. Come on, bro. Come on, man. I mean, they're not equally as bad, but come on. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, shit. Ken Griffey Jr., excuse me, minus the injuries, and Jose Fernandez had he, you know, resting.
Peace. Are you saying, like, because you started this off by saying top five?
No, what if? No, these I got some. These are top five. Would
they if Kevin, would Ken Griffey Jr., like, what would have happened if he didn't get injured?
Mm-hmm.
He had, so by the point of 2000, when he starts getting injured, right, after his first year with the Reds, he literally has 266 home runs, 727 RBIs. He still finishes with 630 home runs. Mm-hmm. But the pace that he was on, he was hitting like 40, 50 home runs, 130, 140 RBIs. If he doesn't get hurt and he's able to put together a couple more of those seasons, we're talking about he's the best hitter of all time. He's the, you know, the home run king. Like, he's all of that shit because he got robbed of his whole second half of the career. It's the same way I feel with fucking Albert Pujols. If Albert Pujols, you know, didn't get all those injuries and didn't turn into an old man way early on, we're talking about like the greatest player of all fucking time when we're talking about Ken Griffey. And on the other end with Jose Fernandez, man, we're talking about a time when we're talking about Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, and Justin Verlander. And there's no one after that.
Mm-hmm.
Jose Fernandez busted his way through that fucking gate on the shitty ass Marlins, bro. The shitty ass Marlins, and was dominating. And if he doesn't pass away, the Marlins might have ended up with a fucking championship, because I think that started them, that downfall of that really good team they had put together with Stanton, JT Realmuto, Christian Yelich. They had some dogs, you know, for pitching. And he was the leader of that. And like, my God, man, Jose Fernandez, I hope he doesn't get forgotten over time, because that dude was, I ordered his jersey and he passed away like literally a couple, like 2 or 3 days after I fucking got the jersey, bro. Like, I was such a fucking fan of his because he was so fucking good, bro. Uh-huh. I was devastated when he fucking passed away, man. Idiot Excuse behavior, me. But like, you know, it's mm-hmm. it is what it is, man.
Nothing Everyone wrong does with that, it. Man. Yeah. It, like you say, idiot behavior, though. Gotcha. Yep.
Yeah.
So, listen, I got to ask a quick question, man, because this is the first, well, the first position I played when I played baseball was first base, right? No, sorry, I played shortstop. Then when I started beaming people playing first base, they moved me to teach me how to pitch, literally, right?
Yeah.
So I would go from pitching to first base, right? And I have something here that I want to ask you because I noticed this as a trend, right? I don't ingest as much baseball because I grew into a basketball freak, right? as sports, you know what I mean? Played in my life. But I did notice, right, that there's like a 100 pitch limit nowadays with modern pitchers versus Nolan Ryan and shit like that.
Throwing like fucking 200 and 150.
Yes, 150. Yeah, all that type of shit, right? Would you say that the with no pitch clock and, you know what I mean, to make the sport faster and things of that nature, do you think that pitchers are being babied too much?
It's weird, man, because you look at basketball, right,
mm-hmm.
and the Achilles thing that's fucking coming around.
Okay.
It's like, how do you prevent this shit, right?
And what you gonna say, Tommy like, John?
Yeah, when it comes to fucking pitchers, man, it's like, it's deep-rooted into how they come up, how they get caught, or how they get coached, how they get taught.
Mm-hmm.
It honestly, there's no answer for it, man. And I think that's the thing. Unless you like do something crazy, like you give fucking pitchers like some kind of surgery immediately as they come into the league to like mm-hmm. strengthen their elbow or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real answer for it. I mean, it's like you got to think about what you're asking the human body to do when you mm-hmm. pitch. Like throw 90 plus miles per hour over 50, 60, 70 times a game, throw 100 pitches where even if you're throwing a curveball, you're still fucking putting some oomph into it.
Uh-huh.
Like you're whipping your elbow so much. And then even after that, they have to like, you know, practice in between their two starts.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, yeah, I mean, I don't really think it's just what what the fuck are us as humans doing throwing a ball fucking 90 miles per hour anyway? Like if you pull all the sports and everything out of it, Like, God did not intend our bodies to be throwing a fucking 90, 100 mile per hour, like, ball. Like, it's just, it's fucking, it's like in football. Like, we're not like supposed to be getting tackled by like 300 pound fucking dudes who are really trying to fucking rip your head off in the name of getting the football from you. You know what I mean? So like realistically, we shouldn't be fucking pitching anyway as human beings. So I don't think there's really an answer for it. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some research, some technology and shit that comes out.
But you're right though. Sports is coach synonymously like across board. Like, you highlight what you're best at. You understand what I'm saying? Right. So even as a pitcher, I remember that because that's what I did. Right. The craziest thing about it is, they told me to throw splitters and cutters all the time. Like, do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it was like, once I got command of the split finger like that way, the motherfuckers didn't really let me throw the curve. They didn't let me, you know what I mean? Because I was tall, you know what I mean? So I guess it was, I've never been on the receiving end of one of my pitches, but I guess it's, you know what I mean? Like some type of imposition that happened, you know what I mean? Like whatever, mentally, along with the speed and all that kind of shit. So it was amazing, you know what I mean, figuring it out. You understand what I'm saying? But it was also one of those things that, like you said, it makes all of the sense on why the specific injury happens. And it's just like basketball. Once I was taller, it was like, go down in the paint, post up, spin move. You know, Hakeem, you understand what I mean? Yeah. Pump fake, spin move, move. You know what I mean? It was the same shit. And then it was like, now people are becoming my same size, but I have a big man package because I was always playing taller, but I'm playing with people my size. So now I can actually do that move and shake them like I would shake somebody that was taller. So it's pretty, it's one of those things, but you know, fundamentally it works to your benefit in a sport like basketball versus baseball because you're going to fucking pull something.
Yeah, man. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know, like, motherfuckers are going to have to get like steel elbows or some shit. I don't fucking know.
But I still think they're being baby, man. I think they're being baby.
I mean,
man,
a little bit, but like, you gotta consider though, like, it's the same thing as what you pointed out with Tracy McGrady, right? Mm-hmm. He started basketball at a young age, so he has all that wear and tear coming into the league.
Mm-hmm.
This is how it is for pitchers, because as soon as like kids get into like middle school baseball, they start having to throw their fucking life into these pitches in high school, in college, now in baseball, but not only baseball, but they're fighting through the minor leagues to try to get to that, the biggest stage in baseball. So it's just, it's not like, cause like when it comes to baby, it's like, you have to baby the pitchers. You literally have to, really take into consideration all this shit, because back in the day, as much as it wasn't highlighted, I guarantee you like Nolan Ryan fucking blew out his elbow and he was still pitching with a fucking bad elbow and all these other dudes, because they didn't know what was what or, you know, what have you. But
that's
like
why
now,
they gave Andy Pettit for the steroids.
Right. And it's like we're so fucking advanced now in technology and shit. We're so able to like pinpoint injuries as soon as they happen that there is no chance that, like, you know, as soon as you're hurt, you're out. Like that's it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You out.
Yeah. But back in the day, these motherfuckers, like, I mean, Larry Bird's a good example of it too, like fucking playing with every fucking injury in the fucking book, but he was still able to go because there ain't no stopping him. There's no technology to say, oh, your career is fucking over if you fucking play through that. But you know, I digress. Those were some good fucking questions. So I'm changing this up a little bit.
Okay.
All right. So top five dark horse teams going into the NFL season. What do you got?
Oh, man. So for number one, I am going to go with the Las Vegas Raiders. All right. Quietly had a great offseason, right? According to the NFL analyst Bucky Brooks, Pete Carroll's arrival plus the returning stars of Crosby and Wilkins. I think they're going to be okay. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. Listen, they also got the Rook in the backfield. You know what I mean? I think that we might see some things over there. I think culture reset, a defensive mind, you know what I mean? Like a culture reset on the offensive end in totality for Las Vegas, you know, and the defensive firepower. I think they might sleep on, so they might be a sleeper surprise.
All right, number two. I was thinking of throwing them on the list, but I didn't.
I'm going to give you somebody else too, like, right? Because they always up there. And even though people think that they lost some things, I think that they still are a dark horse to watch out for. I'm going with the San Francisco 49ers too. All right. I'm being honest. I think they're going to be a dark horse. I think their defense got deeper, literally, even though they lost some of those other things. Their defense got deeper in the draft, all right? And it's going to, with most of what's going on in their division, what they gained is going to shore up that run defense, right? But still, they still got Ayuk. They still got Kittles. They still got McCaffrey. They still got Brock Purdy. That is a core. All right, number three, kind of crazy, man, that I'm going with this. This scared me myself. I'm going to be honest with you. But I got to go with the Cincinnati Bengals, even though, right, listen, I'm a little scary on them, but I got them as a dark horse. Everything of what I think they are tired of, even though some of the other things haven't been shored up. I don't think that we're going to get a slow start with Higgins and Chase and Burrow this year. But I do believe that we may get a scary start with their defense, right? With things still not being secured there, all right? But those are number three for me, all right? Number four, you might like this one. I'm going with the Dallas Cowboys. Check it out. Okay. All right, listen, Dak Prescott fully returns, man. All he does is win 10 and a half games, I'm going to be honest. And now, all they, with the addition of George Pickens in this year, right, they could flip it from being underwhelming to playoff caliber, right? I like that three-headed race. I like that Washington, Philadelphia, Dallas, that old school shit that I'm used to.
Yeah,
I love how that goes. You understand what I'm saying? And number five, right, I'm going with the Denver Broncos, right? Sean Payton, that impact is really real. He really liked Bo Nix. Remember, he went and got him. You understand what I'm saying? And what he did, like I talked about last episode, that 34 touchdowns, I think they are a dark horse for the AFC West. They got to improve defense, all right, and he's stable.
All right. I fuck with it. I fuck with it. I fuck with your list. So, you know, number I'll start on the other end. Number five, I'm going with the Arizona Cardinals, man.
Oh, not bad.
Like, we're talking about Kyler Murray is still there, you know, still working on it. I still think he's a great fucking quarterback. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to have a very good comeback season, you know, for them. Didn't have the best rookie year. I think their coaching's in a cool spot. They've opened, you know, they opened the check, or not the checkbook, but they made a lot of moves for their defense. You know, they still got, you know, decent offense. I think they can make some noise that people are not really expecting from them. Number four, I got the New England Patriots, man. Listen, I don't want to shit on your Jets, and I don't want to, you know, shit on the Dolphins, but at the end of the day, I don't, even though I like that the spotlight is taken off the Jets and they still got talent, I don't think they're going to quite get it done. And when it comes to the Dolphins, I think they are an absolute disaster going into the year. I think the Bills will have that division easily, and I think the Patriots can slide in to a wild card spot. Look, Drake May showed exactly what they needed to be shown. They got good. They got hard nosed, tough coaching back in that fucking locker room. You know, they upgraded their offensive line. I think Stephon Diggs, say whatever you want about him, but he is looking fucking great right now. Practicing. And their defense, the Patriots defense, that's always a thing, man. They got good shit going on there. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if they sneak into a wild card. Number three, I got the Atlanta Falcons, man. I don't think a lot of people are looking at the Atlanta Falcons because of the dominance of Baker Mayfield and those Buccaneers in that division. The Falcons, they got really good strides from Penix last year when they finally started him and threw him in there. They got, you know, Drake London. I think Kyle Pitts can have a better year this year. You know, I think going into it now with Penix as your starter rather than taking over middle of the season when Kirk Cousins was a disaster, I think they can contend for winning that division. Number two, and it's fucking funny, Kem, that you had them also. I got the Dallas Cowboys, man. Mm-hmm. Look, I don't like the Cowboys, but what I will say is going into it fully healthy. They're going into it with not only CeeDee Lamb now, they're going to have Pickens. I think Dak Prescott, for whatever it's fucking worth, he's a consistent quarterback until it matters most. Mm-hmm. Their defense is looking really good. They drafted, I think, pretty well. Everything as it stands looks like that the Dallas Cowboys should fucking be, you know, a contending team again. It's just like they are every other year. But number one, I got the Houston Texans, man. And I don't know if they're a dark horse truly. I don't know where people's thoughts are about the Houston Texans, but I said it on the last episode. I'll say it on this episode, man. Fucking, I love everything that's going on. They're fucking, you know, D'Amico Ryans has that team fucking straight. CJ Stroud has that team straight. Fucking Nico Collins is going to be fucking healthy coming into this year. They made some good moves in the offseason to position this team well. Everyone's starting to become fucking, you know, seasoned. Well, like when you consider CJ Stroud going into year three, Will Anderson going into year two, et cetera, or I think Will Anderson's also going into year three. But with everything considered, man, I think the Houston Texans are going to fucking cook things this year. And I'm fucking here for it, brother.
Mm, not bad. Ooh. I have no problems with that. I'm loving how I'm loving how you loving some of the things that we talked about before. Because I'm telling you, man, Michael Penix, I love that guy. I think that he's one of those
guys. It's crazy, and that's why I bring him up, is because no one's talking about him. Like we talk about all the other success from that class. We talk about Bo Nix. We talk about Jaden Daniels. We talk about Caleb Williams. We talk about all these dudes. Like people are even talking about J.J. McCarthy more than fucking Michael Penix. No one's talking about Penix at all.
But it was like that. It was like that until they showed up. You know what I mean? When he played for Washington.
Spotlight on this dude. Yes, no spotlight whatsoever on the Falcons. And that's good to have. Because they had that spotlight with Kirk Cousins and shit. Because like, why the hell would you sign Kirk Cousins and draft Penix? And this is why I find it. They locked. As bad as that move seems, because they threw a lot of money away, it was a decent move. You signed Kirk Cousins, you know, as time went along a little bit before the draft, they didn't really like what they were seeing too much.
Yes.
So they drafted Penix just in case. Pick
like seven straight games. Some of those games he threw 2 and 3. You know what I mean? Like that was hard to sit back there and watch. Like I think his Achilles might not have been totally healed, or he wasn't totally ingrained into the offense yet. You know what I mean? But it just didn't look right for Kirk Cousins. You know what I mean? One of the most efficient, top five efficient quarterback over his tenure as a QB in the NFL. So at the end of the day, that just didn't look like him. You know what I mean? And the young boy deserved a shot, because at the end of the day, the young boy,
he got an arm, man.
And he is highly accurate. You understand what I'm saying? He's totally built for a play action, just a left-handed quarterback that people aren't used to seeing in that type of system. But it's one of those things, man, that, and he's polished, you know what I mean? So let's see, man. He wasn't like that young, you know what I mean? So, it's a good thing. I think that,
Because I mean, he has a top fucking running back next to him. Yes, I mean, they have a good 1-2 combo.
He's
number one in my
fantasy every year since he's been a rook.
Then, like, offense, Drake London, Darnell Moody. Like, I like it, man.
Pitts is going to be able to be used more this year. You understand what I'm saying? So it's going to be something. You know what I mean? I think they'll be fine. Yeah. You know?
All right, so let's end this off with different or not NFL players. So, sure. Here's how I want to do this, right?
Okay.
Before, and we'll go back to randomizing. I think it's a good idea. But what I want to do is I want to officially start right here, this episode. And whoever we say is different is just going to be part of, they're different.
Okay.
And I'm going to keep a list.
All right.
We're going to keep going from there.
My boy, let's do it.
I have three players. Because, and remember, we got to put some good significance on that word different, because I think there's going to be one person here that you're going to say is different, and I'm going to say is not, and I'm going to absolutely disrespect him, and I'm going to get torn apart, and I'm ready for it. But first player, and I think we're going to agree on this one, Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, not to put, you know, too much words on it, but like when you consider everything that he's achieved in such a fucking quick time, when we talk about the greatness of Tom Brady, you know, and all that, and how it will never be touched. But then now the conversation is, can Patrick Mahomes catch Tom Brady? Yeah, that motherfucker is different. And I'm fucking so glad we get to fucking witness the career of Patrick Mahomes.
Absolutely.
Number two, and this is where we might disagree, Drew Brees.
No.
Oh, wow. So we agree. Wow. Why not?
Well, I'm just going to go with his ability to deliver the ball down the field past 30, 40 yards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, he's totally, that's the thing.
You know what I mean? I think that it's, you know, just to kind of just further elaborate real quick, I think that his height and things like that wasn't really a problem. I think that his accuracy, you know, in a quick pick and dunk, you know what I mean, that was revolutionized, you know what I mean, through Sean Payton's offense. you know what I mean, to get those guys off of those quick slants and use those big body receivers that he was able to keep and acquire, you know what I mean, throughout his tenure as a quarterback, you know what I mean, helped him out a lot, you know what I mean? But a lot of those guys didn't have long careers from getting cracked across the middle like that. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna say something.
At the end of the day, real talk though, man. Not too mobile. You know what I mean? A lot of those things. So no, I'm just gonna say not different.
Yeah, and I might say something crazy here, man. But I don't. If Katrina never happens, Drew Brees gets a fucking Super Bowl championship, man. Mm-hmm. They were that Super Bowl they won was off of that power of fucking Katrina and trying to really deliver for fucking New Orleans, man. Hey, I'll get ripped apart for that one.
Is that why they got got by that Minnesota thing that time?
I mean, fuck. And this is what I'm saying with Drew Brees, man. He has been on so many fucking good-ass teams that I would say he's been on more. If you compare him and Aaron Rodgers, I would think he's been on more championship-level teams than Aaron Rodgers was, because we know the Green Bay Packers struggled for a while putting a team around Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. But when it came to Drew Brees, it almost seemed like he was always in a fucking good situation where he just had to be that dog, and it often came down to the last play. It often came down to a fucking referee miscall, and I get it. It's, you know, in certain moments, we can point back to those referee miscalls and shit. But at the end of the day, if you're a fucking dog, you get your team to a point where a referee call ain't going to fucking blow the whole game.
Right.
And that was always my issue with fucking Drew Brees. He just couldn't get it done.
Right.
And I have the same criticism for Aaron Rodgers, too. But what I would difference Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers is that Aaron Rodgers was a fucking bad man when he fucking needed to be in a lot of situations. So.
And he'd take off on your ass. So at the end of the day, that was something that Drew didn't have in his arsenal, which made you fear him a little bit more. You know what I mean?
And Aaron Rodgers was carrying some fucking sorry teams to, you know what I mean? Like I said, Drew Brees always been loaded with talent.
Yeah.
The third one, and I love this guy, man, Kurt Warner.
Absolutely, Kurt Warner.
Yes. Yeah. Yo, man, you know, his story.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Do you know his story, bro? Yes, he was different.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, obviously, I mean, I was like a baby. I was like a fucking toddler. While Kurt
that's
Warner
why I said, do you know his story? Yeah.
But he is one of my top five favorite football players of all time.
Listen, man. Go ahead.
No, you're good, man. You're good. Because I think we're both just like, Kurt Warner.
Yes. Good. I got on that Rams blue right there, too, I think. Like, that's like,
bro,
the Rams blue.
Arena
Yankee.
Fucking football, bro. Like, arena football to being a fucking Super Bowl champion, MVP, bro. And I get it. The St. Louis Rams did have, like, a phenomenal team. But, man, that dude is a dog. He is literally, like, how do I put, like, all of us middle-aged adults that, like, you know, missed our chance to be fucking athletes. He was someone that, like, he missed his chance to be that top fucking athlete and still somehow got it out of the entire fucking mud to still make it to the fucking NFL and still ball and still have one of the best stories that we have ever fucking seen, man. Like Kurt Warner, that is, it's a top five sports story, bro. That's why I put their ring as highly as I do, because that fucking Kurt Warner, man.
Hey, besides every great man, there's an even greater woman, man, who is a variable to that story that is phenomenal. You understand what I'm saying? That we got to highlight, you know what I'm saying? Behind every great man is an even greater woman. You understand what I'm saying? And it was a beautiful, it is a great story, because at the end of the day, I'm being young and I'm not, you know, of course I know that when they're flashing, because at the end of the day, I can say this, right? I know that they're flashing that that's his wife, you know what I'm saying? And it doesn't impact me that, because I don't know the story before. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
All that stuff isn't privy to us at the time, because it's before the advent of social media and everything. So, you know what I mean? You're just knowing that that's his wife, and you don't know the real backstory and why it's always so spiritual. And you know what I mean? Like every time they're showing it. But at the end of the day, you did know a little bit about his career and that he wasn't expected to be anywhere as near as good as he was.
That's why I said, like, you know, I think of him like, you know, all these dudes in our life that are like still running fucking like, you know, adult football leagues, still trying to, you know, see if they can magically make an NFL run. And that's fucking Kurt Warner.
Yes, sir.
Yo, man, I think that's a good fucking spot to end this episode. What a good episode. You know, me and Kem always bringing the fucking heat.
Yeah.
But I want to talk to the listeners real quick before we get off, man. Look, we want y'all to join the fucking ride. We want y'all to be fucking different with us. We've been figuring this out, you know, on and off over 3 years. We want you guys tuning in. Listen, man, we're trying to be different. And that's the main thing. I know I repeat it a lot, but we don't want to be those corny dudes that you guys see on TV that you guys criticize every day. We don't want to bring just, you know, straight up stats to the table and stats alone. We like to incorporate everything. So we want you guys to like, subscribe, get in tune. Because if you're not going to be in tune, man, there's no weenies allowed, brother. There is no fucking weenies allowed. The little SpongeBob.
This is different. This is different, man.
Honestly, we're going to keep producing this content. We have a lot of good ideas that are on the way. So make sure you guys get in tune, because it's going to be a fucking fantastic rest of the summer for us and an even better winter for us when basketball comes back. So make sure you guys like, subscribe, get those seatbelts on, because there's no place with the better take that we're my bad. There is no place with the hottest takes, because I know we say some fucking bullshit. There is no place with the hottest takes, the best laughs, and the best aura, because we are different. Have a good day. Have a good night. Play the fucking music. Play the music the whole time. Fuck that. I'm going to go back and play the music the whole time. We love y'all. We love everyone that's here supporting us. Have a good night.
Thailand.